Listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, June 17th, 2026. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh, Hawa, Tuksuk Newsom, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. You may also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Today, we welcome Juno Assembly members Christine Wall and Greg Smith. On this month's Borough Breakdown, we chat about the budget process and the decisions that were made and what it all means for the future. Plus, the Visitor Industry Task Force is having public testimony on Thursday where your feedback is encouraged. We chat with two citizens who are encouraging residents to build community and have their voices heard. And the Jewish Film Festival at the Gold Town continues this month with screenings of Sabbath Queen. We chat with the filmmaker about this feature documentary filmed over the course of 21 years. That's pretty cool. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. But first, this week's Tlingit Word of the Week.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Keishi Bessie Cooley. And the word this week is sock.
Sock.
That means hooligan. And here is a sentence. People light hooligan grease. Let's hear it again.
Sock.
Hooligan. Gunash Cheesh to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Keishi Bessie Cooley is Kokhetan and a child of a Yenyedi man. She is from Daisleen, Teslin, and grew up spending time in Teslin and around Teslin Lake. She earned a master's degree in Indigenous Languages and Linguistics from Simon Fraser University and interviewed many speakers for the Hashagun language series. She is currently translating projects for the Children of the Takhu Society.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ok Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also watch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. You can even leave a comment if you want. That'd be kind of cool. I welcome into the studio now, I have Juno Assembly members Christine Wall and Greg Smith, along with communications specialist Phil Hibshin. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio today. Wasiati, how are you today, Christine?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having us.
Excellent. And Greg, welcome in.
Well as well. Thanks, Boston.
Thank you so much. And Gunathcheesh, Phil, nice to see you again.
Gunathcheesh, always good to see you, Boston.
Communications specialist. This is a series we started, earlier this year to bring sort of a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on in our city government. And today we're going to be looking at what was recently in the news a lot, the budget planning and approval process. We went through a lot of change over the course of the last year, starting with the election last fall, which took away a bunch of money that the city would normally get through a couple of budget or ballot measures. Thank you. That's what those are, the ballot measures. And I'm curious, I want to first ask, when those ballot measures passed last fall as assembly members, Christine, what was your first thought? Got a lot of work to do.
I think that's pretty accurate. We've got a lot of work to do. It was a significant change. There was a lot of uncertainty going into it. There were a few different tax initiatives on the ballot, and we didn't know how it all shake out. One of our primary challenges over the last year is, or since then, is we still don't quite know what the impact of that is. We're just starting to get data on how those initiatives are impacting our revenue. We know that it's going to be a lot. We don't quite know how much money the city is losing exactly. So we're still trying to figure that out.
I saw something, Greg, where I think city manager Katie Kester was saying, like, it's really like, it's going to be seen over time, sort of thinking about 2 years down the line before you really get an idea. But what was your first thought when it went through last fall?
I mean, definitely like, well, now the work begins. Somewhat nice to have certainty instead of the uncertainty during the entire election. But, you know, I think as we talk about working with some, not unknown numbers, but maybe kind of incomplete data, I mean, one reason is sales tax returns, there's a lag, it takes time to process information, there's the implementation of the ballot measures to actually make it so, you know, vendors are exempting the things that they should and they're recording that correctly. So it's taking a little bit of time to get the data. That being said, we do have data, I think, from quarter three of FY26, so that's January through March. And our finance director or our finance team had predicted we would, due to the ballot measures, we'd have $2.7 million less in revenue. And I think the actual numbers have come in at about $2.4 million. So they predicted it's a little less, but they did see it. And vendors report that exemption, so we can actually.
Because they could look back at like 3 to 5 year averages and kind of get a sense of what might be changing in there.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And I do want to point this out because when I learned this, I don't know, a few years back, I was surprised, but I the work that the assembly does is immense. And I just want people to understand that you guys don't really get a salary per se. You get like a few hundred bucks a month.
We get $1,000 gross.
A month. So that's not a whole lot of money because you also have jobs, I think, and you are then doing this on your evenings and weekends. So you're putting in all this time reading tons of reports. I just want to give you props for like.
Thank you.
It is a lot of work. It's an honor and a privilege.
Even stepping up to do that work and add that to your. I mean, it's like being a board member, but a lot more than being a board member of an organization because you're
a board member. It's a high-intensity board responsibilities.
Yeah, you're a board member for the city, which is huge, and you're making a lot of big decisions here. So then after that sort of came through and then kind of looking at what was going to needing to be happening, can you take somebody like me, a layman, through like what was that process of, okay, so now that happens, then what did you all need to do? Where did that fall? How does budget get made? All that kind of, what's the meat behind the sauce or whatever that phrase is?
Yeah, so we really kicked off in December of last year our budget process, and we do a assembly retreat every year towards the end of the year, and we all got together and said, okay, we know we're going to see significant revenue loss. What do we do about that? And we basically gave staff and our city manager direction. We said, hey, we need you to do some things right off the bat to get us on the right track. So we asked her to basically stop a lot of new projects that had been in the works. We asked her to really tighten the belt around our general city infrastructure, and we asked her to look at raising fees across the board, facilities and permits and that kind of thing. And then we said, that's not going to be enough. And so we do also need to look at, of all the services across the city, are there ones that we just shouldn't do anymore because we don't have the resources to do? And we said, city manager, it's not really your job to decide what services we do or do not. That's really the assembly. And we said, so that's going to be our job, and we want community input. And so we took 4 months or so to walk a community engagement process. We did a big survey, got a lot of great feedback from the survey. We also did some workshops. And then that information was reported back to the assembly, and we basically spent 2 months walking through the city budget and saying, all right, where do we want to make additional cuts in addition to the work the city manager did.
I see. And I know we talked about this when we first started this back in the spring, Phil. And just maybe, Greg, you can explain the difference real quick, because I think people get confused about, and it's a lot of the articles that have come out, it explains like the general fund versus the other funds where money gets put into that isn't part of the general fund. And these tax cuts, we're dealing with the general fund, right? Not those other funds. Just explain all that for me a little bit.
Yep. So, you know, I think we just passed a budget the other night that was around $540 million.
Okay.
Of that, around $140 is the general government services. The other things are some school district funds, Bartlett Hospital, which is a $140 million organization, Docks and Harbors, the airport. So people hear the number 540 and we're like, oh, you're expected to be down 8, 10 million. That doesn't seem too hard,
but it
really is affecting that $140 million general government services budget, which is streets and plowing, police, fire, parks and rec. Anyway, a lot of those, the more standard city services people think about, water and wastewater and some of those things.
Right, so, and some of the capital projects aren't part of the general fund, right?
That includes capital projects.
It does,
too.
Okay. Okay. I was just curious. Okay. So, because I know people have questions about that, like, well, why are we going to continue doing XYZ when we could cut that and use that money for the general, you know, whatever it is. But I know that's all gets very confusing. So that's good to know, just that there's different funds that happen. So I'm curious about the survey that did take place for the community. How did that impact you and what did you learn from that survey? Was it helpful to the assembly for people to respond and say, hey, these are the things we value?
I think it was really helpful. We got a lot of feedback. People were like, this is so hard. Like, how dare you make me choose between all these amazing things the city does? And we said, yes, we understand, but that is our job. That's what we have to do. And so forcing the community to make those decisions, too, was valuable to me. I think, like, high level, you know, what we heard again and again, the most important core services that they expect from their city are schools, safety, streets.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we made a decision early on, like, we're going to protect those things. And then some of the other things people really love, but they kind of, there was some, I guess, acceptance or, you know, to say, okay, when we're talking about recreation or our housing programs or some of our grants, maybe those are things that we don't need to do. And so that's really where the assembly started this conversation, was we looked at some of those maybe non-essential things. I mean, some of those I think are essential, but we started with kind of, all right, putting aside streets, schools, and safety, what are these other things the cities does, and, you know, where can we see reductions there?
Yeah, I liked it. When I took the survey, I was thinking about it in terms of my own personal life, too. Like, how do I value, what do I value? And you always have those conversations with your spouse or your partner. You're like, well, okay, do we cut cable? Where do we trim so that we can afford the basic stuff, which is a roof over our head and wheels under our feet and all that kind of thing? And so that's an interesting dilemma that I think a lot of people were able, I remember the feedback on that was like, oh, this is really hard to think about, like, because we want all this stuff. We want everything, but it just doesn't happen. So I guess I want to move to when you get to the hard conversations, and there was a long list. I know it was 37 or 40 things or whatever it was, and not all of those went away. You were able to preserve some things. I know there was a big public outcry for the pools, and those stayed in place, but some things did have to get cut. But I know, as you've been quoted in other areas, Christine, not enough. Like, we're going to run into stuff in the future. But let's start with what actually happened. So where did we land with the budget, and what did we lose? What did we lose?
I mean, the list, in no particular order, we reduced Travel Juno, our Juno marketing destination marketing organization, 400,000. We reduced JDC by 300. Mm. Obviously, the reduction about 250 to the Juno Douglas Museum, which, you know, drastically affects operations there. Still will have some ability to stay open to the public, but definitely challenged there. And I mean, you know, This, yeah. this, but these reductions, you know, people are losing their jobs. We were in the manager's office when she's like, "Oh, they're coming in. I have to wet sign the, you know, the layoff slip." So that was,
That was my question too. Is what's the timeline on this? Does it start July? I mean, is it because the budget starts July 1, so layoffs are happening and things are okay? Mm-hmm. Okay.
We cut some grants to Alaska Heat Smart. We reduced an administrative program. We reduced parks and landscaping. So I think a number of city maintained trails will not have like brushing. So they might get, you know, you might, it's gonna, the trail might
see
get a little
stuff.
Thinner and run into stuff. I mean, impacts all around. I think our kind of overall operating budget reductions, maybe about 1.2. I mean, some of them we said were one time. I'd say if things don't change in terms of revenue or other, you know, either increased revenue from reduced exemptions, what we're looking at, or increased revenue from another source, you know, the things that we said were one time, I could see them becoming, you know, recurring or permanent.
And what about I know Mount Jumbo is going to be sold, and that was counted as money, but that's going to take some time for that. Do we have a timeline on when that might happen, or we don't know?
It'll take some time in terms of the disposal, and then who wants to buy it, and, you know.
So it's money in the bank, but not really. On paper, it's money.
I don't think we even count it in terms of our, you know, our fund balance, because, you know, it's
not
assessed
yet.
Or, at, you know, $2.5 million or something, but... Is someone going to pay that?
And, right.
Overall, I think we saw about $60,000 in recurring savings from closing that facility and moving some city operations to Marie Drake. But
now, KTOO last year, obviously the Fed, you know, took away all public funding for public media, and we lost a lot of our budget. And we realized that we could make that up. And this year, and our community stepped up and said, "Hey, we're going to make you whole." More than whole, which was so fantastic, and we thank our community for that. But as this is the same as that, which is it's not just a one-time loss, it's recurring, unless things, as you say, Greg, change. Now, I know that in the news also was the gondola project and having to repay that money to Gold Belt, and then with some of the savings that you were also using to help make up for some of the budget loss for next year, it's going to reduce the... what you have in the bank, right? Your reserve fund. So I guess my question is, what? I know you're retiring, so maybe this isn't going to be your problem, Christine. But
it's all of our problem.
It's everybody's problem. But what happens next year? I mean, are you looking forward to that already? I mean, are you saying, okay, well, you've been quoted saying we haven't done enough. So I'm like really curious, like, when is the, you know, as they say, the stuff going to hit the fan here, Greg?
You know, I think knowing that we had incomplete data, we're going to be getting more results and seeing how those things go. I believe a principle of mine, and I think relatively shared on the assembly, was, I mean, we knew we were supposed to make $2 million in operating reductions this year. We got to 1.2. Wait, sorry, I lost my train of thought.
That's right. So
we didn't get to where we needed, and you know we'll have more information. And again, sorry, one of our principles was let's not try to do, you know, complete harm to some of these operations and things. Like we didn't completely close the city museum or something.
Right.
So we preserved some of those functions. If things do not change next year, when we will have more information, I mean, again, recreational facilities, we didn't make significant reductions in hours or operations there. Some of those things will definitely be needing to be looked at if things don't change, because you can only patch a recurring hole for so long using one-time funds. You know, people, we don't need to get deep into Telephone Hill, but there's $5 million in an account for Telephone Hill. I think our expected recurring deficit after the manager reduced the budget by $4 million, she increased revenue by $2 million, we reduced by $1.2 million, and we're looking at some other revenue. But I think even with that math, we still expect a recurring operational deficit of $8 million. Mm. I think Augustus Brown Pool was, I think if we closed it, we would save 600,000. So, I mean, it is still, there was still a big gap.
It's a big deficit. We essentially filled it with savings this year, which was, I think, a good strategy because of that uncertainty and wanting to spend some time making these decisions thoughtfully.
Well, it gives you a bridge to sort of really think about, okay, what can we do next year? Yep. What are we going to need to do next year? And how can we really look at the, like you said, the data that comes in? The last thing I want to mention real quick is that tax exemption for items over $15,000, you raise that to 50. Cars are not part of that or something, right? But so who does that impact, that particular sales tax? Like what kind of items besides cars are being bought? Are boats part of that? Are boat considered a vehicle or no?
Boats would not be a vehicle. Okay. I think they would now be subject to the new cap. Okay. You know, jewelry has for a long time at least never had the cap applied to it. It is a little bit tricky because, you know, people hear that number. I would say to the average person, cars are the big one.
Yeah.
Home improvements for a lot of times do have exemptions because they'll need permits and some of these. Anyway, right. Some of them are exempt to tax. I mean, I think our understanding is it's some of these big purchases and typically by some of our larger organizations in towns, the mines, AL&P. They make large purchases. High value purchases, but I mean there will be other services, people, you know, businesses and people buy, you know, expensive stuff all the time for business.
I wish.
Say for the average person. That's kind of why we did a car
exemption. I work at nonprofit public radio.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, so before we have to go, I just want to give you an opportunity. Is there anything that you hope for the future? I know, Christine, you're retiring off of the assembly this year. Is there words of wisdom for those who may be running or for those who are still on the assembly that you would like to leave them with?
Yeah, I think, if you like or don't like the decisions we're making, it's a good opportunity to step up and get involved, whether that's running for assembly or coming to our meetings or sending us emails. Like, we did do this intensive public engagement process, but that's going to continue given the work we're going to have to do in the next year as well. And so be part of that. I need to emphasize, you know, the size of the operating budget is significant. You know, when I look at what $8 million of general fund does for the city, like to make up that deficit, I'm not suggesting these are the things that we should look at, but like just to give you a sense of the scale, like $8 million, if you got rid of Eagle Crest, both pools, closed the field house, closed the rink, you wouldn't get to $8 million. And so we're in a tricky position. We've heard from a lot of people who do want us to be looking at additional ways that we can get revenue. That's my hope, is that we can figure out how to bring in additional revenue so we don't have to talk as much about cutting those things.
Right. And that, Greg, would that be your hope too, in terms of making, like, finding ways to make additional revenue?
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking for ways to be more efficient. I mean, the assembly looked through the budget. We put forward 40. I mean, I guess I want to say no one found this thing that we do that just, you know, there just isn't this thing that you can just cut off and not have any, you know, impacts. And I think another principle we looked at was, if we're going to do something, we're going to do it well. We're not going to be like 10% across the board everywhere, because then things just, it's like, no, if we're going to do it, we should do it well as a government. I do share that hope of, you know, additional revenue. We're looking at some options, but we'll do what we need. If I just want to shout out really quick to the Eagle Crest supporters out there, this is an important time for Eagle Crest. Like, get a pass, get your kids into lessons. Like, they took a significant, I mean, I think it was a 30% operating budget reduction, and that was anticipated on like pretty high revenue. If they don't achieve that revenue, their deficit will be much more significant. So now is the time to show your support for Eagle Crest and buy a pass and do the things and chicken tenders and everything you can do. So anyway, well, just want to call that out.
Gunnath Cheesh for being here, Christine and Greg. And then Phil, I just wanted to ask, so as Christine mentions, like the public process, are you going to continue doing workshops and are you continuing to look at ways to engage the public in this conversation?
We are definitely leaving that door open. The whole engagement process that we went through earlier this year that Christine mentioned was really designed to be repeatable and repurposable. So as opportunity arises and as conversations change, as we get information about the budget, we're definitely going to be holding those opportunities in mind and scheduling them and putting things together as we can. But I did have a couple other call outs really quick. Following Christine's plug to run for city office, if you're interested in doing that, the filing period for your candidacy is July 17th through the 27th. So it's coming up pretty quick here. There's a lot of good resources on the city clerk's website. So visit that and learn about how you can get more involved. If you want to learn more about the budget engagement process, that website is still up. Just Google CBJ Community Compass and it'll be like the first option. You can see how the workshops were structured, all of the survey results, everything is posted on that website. So it's a great way to learn more. And then you can visit juno.gov/finance to just learn more about the city budget in general. And there's a lot of good resources there as well.
I appreciate it. I appreciate y'all being here. Gunnath Cheesh for coming on and getting us through this process and the work that you do. We know it's not easy, but thanks for being transparent as well. I really appreciate it. And I figured it would be a good time in this transition to our next guest to play a little Buddy Tabor. This one is Love Song for Alaska. I think it's appropriate. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Been sitting here lately, lost inside my dreams. Promise of your return when winter turns to spring. When the sun it starts to shine and the tide flats are supreme. In the warmer days when the salmon migrate up the stream. My love is real, my love is fine. Flows like a river deep inside my mind. In the long dark winter I dream of summer's light. On the ptarmigan are nesting and the wild geese are in flight. In search of the Northland they've come home once again. Gonna leave us on that first cold winter's wind. My love is real, love is fine. Flows like a river deep inside my mind. Love is fine, flows like a river deep inside my mind. My love for this great land runs deep inside my veins. Like a wild and rushing river, it's crazy and insane. Fireweed on the hillside has set itself ablaze, evaporates into the sun, bright in the yellow haze. My love is real.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Thank you.
Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The vision of the Visitor Industry Task Force formed in 2019, and it established a resolution that continues to guide the efforts of this committee and helps guide future policy decisions. It says, the CBJ seeks a healthy and vibrant tourism sector, generating business opportunities and employment for Juneau citizens, protecting Juneau's heritage and cultural values and its natural resources, and making a positive contribution to the community's quality of life. The task force began its second iteration in December of 2025 with the stated purpose of providing helpful advice to the assembly and to advance community thinking on a range of visitor industry topics. And they have been meeting throughout 2026, and this Thursday, that's tomorrow, June 18th, they will hold a meeting where you can speak through public testimony. And today, we aren't debating or saying one way or another which way is better, but my guests are encouraging you to speak your mind and have your voice stand up and be counted. I welcome in now to the studio. I have Junoites. I have Sue Schrader. Welcome in. Gunnith Cheese for being here. Sue, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Boston.
Excellent. I also have Steve Krall. Is it Krall?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome in, Steve. Gunnith Cheese, how are you today?
Good.
Excellent. So my first question is... Well, I want to mention this is tomorrow. It's June 18th. All meetings are at the Assembly Chambers, and it starts at 5:30. So, and you'll have, I think tomorrow, you have up to 3 minutes to give some public commentary, testimony on things about the Visitor Industry Task Force and what they've been working on. So it's a great opportunity for people to get out and sort of speak their mind. And I'm just curious, like, I wonder, oh, that's a nice necklace, Sue. I love that necklace, first of all.
Thank you.
But I wanted to find out, like, so what is important to you about being a community member and having your voice heard?
Well, having... been in this community for 35 years, and Steve has been here even longer than that. You know, both Steve and I love it. We have no plans to move, and we love the sense of community. That sounds a little trite, but it's not. It really is that Juneau comes together when we need to, and tourism industry is obviously a huge economic driver in this community, and I've worked in it in several different capacities, and I really applaud the Assembly's efforts to keep a close eye on it with the two Visitor Industry Task Force. And the current one that started in January so far has not really provided an opportunity for the public to comment verbally. We are always free to submit written comments, but tomorrow night will be the first time that we can, and as Boston said, we get 3 minutes. You can actually also comment over Zoom if you'd prefer to stay home, and if you want to comment via Zoom, just let the city clerk know before 4 p.m. Just
before 4 p.m., yeah.
And if
you have more than you want to say in 3 minutes, you can always email, right?
Absolutely, and that's the other thing I would encourage everyone to consider doing if you're not able or comfortable verbally testifying. You can send your written comments, and if you go to the Visitor Industry Task Force website, pretty easy to find from CBJ's website, you can see the email there, or just send it to the city clerk, and they'll be sure that it gets to the Visitor Industry Task Force members.
I was looking at that website, Steve, and I was seeing, like, they have, you can also go back and see all of the meeting minutes and all of the video, they video every meeting. So if you need to catch up, right, you can figure out what they've been talking about this year and see what might be on the agenda. I'm assuming that they're talking about the things that they are following up on from previous, because the idea for the task force is to offer advice, not to make any decisions necessarily, but to give advice to the assembly about what's going on, even though there's a couple assembly members on the task force, and then there's people who are in the community like yourselves. You're not on the task force either,
no,
of you. So have you been going to the meetings already this year, Steve?
I actually haven't made the meetings in person. I've listened to them on the radio, and I've looked at a little bit at the videos, and I've read some of the transcripts.
Yeah.
And I think the focus so far has been sort of topic specific, with different groups addressing the task force.
I see. Okay.
And you know, I think that works in a lot of ways. But you know, for as the public, you know, we have thoughts about many things some of the time.
Yeah.
And so I think this offers a way for people to address many of the issues that they've wanted to comment on, but you know, it hasn't worked for them, or it hasn't made sense to for them to try to be so specific to a topic. And this would allow people to address what they think is important in whatever order that is, rather than, oh, today we're going to talk about airplanes or whale watching.
Right, because there is no specific agenda tomorrow. It's really just all about public. So anything that maybe hasn't been talked about for this year or in the past that you would want to bring up, tomorrow is the time to show up or join Zoom or email and say your piece, right? I mean, that's sort of cool. And what is it about for you, Steve? I want to ask the same question that I asked of Sue. What is important for you about having a voice and being part of the community? Why is that important to you?
Well, so I guess going back, I came to Alaska around 1975, and I've been in Juneau since 1985. And I've lived downtown almost the whole time, so I see a little bit more tourism than some people have.
Yeah.
And it's grown from something that was really something I looked forward to every summer to something right now that is pretty overwhelming.
Mm.
And I think that we can manage it. The mayor and the assembly have taken some steps, and I think we can take more steps. And I think the real question is, what should those things be, and how should we work with the industry to do it as a cooperative venture? We don't want to crush the industry, nor do we want to be overwhelmed by it.
Right. Yeah, there's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere. And I think that's one thing about having your voice heard is so that people can understand that, especially for people who are living downtown. I think that's a really good, because I mean, that's where most of the ships come in. I know a big process they're dealing with this year, and probably what they're going to be recommending, is the development on the backside of Douglas and what that means for you know, ship limits and all that kind of stuff. I just saw a story about that, so that's going to be really interesting to see how what they come up with in terms of their recommendations. Because like I said, it's a task force that isn't necessarily making any like permanent decisions. They're sort of giving their feedback to the assembly and then trying to figure out what the assembly is going to do with it. Because
right.
We have those MOAs in place, the 16,000 passenger limit, the 5-ship limit, all those things that are working in play over the last couple years. But like you said, tourism is one of our main industries. So I think finding that happy medium is a good thing. And making sure that you get your voice heard and get out there. And I, as you said, Sue, I think there's something about community. We're all in it together, right?
Yeah, and I think what Steve and I and many others that I've talked to would really like to see is how can the community members and industry, tourism industry, have more meaningful conversations and discussions. This is the second visitor industry task force in 7 years, you know, I'm not sure that it's the best way to approach the issues, because I do feel that we could probably benefit from a little bit more community representation on the task forces. Hopefully one of the recommendations coming out of the group this year will be ways to improve communication between community members and the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is your hope for the future, Steve? What would you hope for the task force or for I don't necessarily want to speak about outcomes, but what's your hope?
Well, I'm hoping really that we can identify a process where we have an ongoing conversation about how we effectively manage tourism so that it works out for the broadest number of people. And, you know, the easy part is it should work out for people who live in Juneau. It should work out for the industry itself. And, you know, I wouldn't normally volunteer this and was thinking maybe I wouldn't. But, you know, the current limits that went into effect this year, they don't go as far as I might like. But I think they've made a positive difference. Mm-hmm. And that came about through community input in the city, talking with the industry and working out what people thought was better.
Right.
And I'm happy to say I think it is better. I think there are other things to do,
yeah.
And I wouldn't want to leave it here. But I'm hoping that we kind of find a way to have an ongoing conversation in a way that makes sense as a process, so we're not doing a thing where I talk, they have to listen, and they talk, and I have to listen, but we're talking by each other the whole time.
Right.
I think this is an opportunity to make it as conversational rather than... you know, just we get to take turns now. We're not going to agree, but we'll take turns.
I see. Right. Yeah. Finding the balance is the key, right? Mm-hmm. Finding the balance is the hard part.
For sure.
Well, tomorrow is the meeting. You can go to the meeting at the Assembly Chambers at 5:30. It's the Visitor Industry Task Force. Tomorrow is public testimony. You get 3 minutes, or as we've mentioned, you can... be on Zoom or you can email in. Is there anything last that you want to say, Sue, before we're out of time here?
Just that I would certainly encourage folks to make an opportunity to do this. There will be one other public opportunity before the Visitor Industry Task Force in October, after the force comes out with their draft recommendations.
Yeah, I saw that on the calendar. There'll be one more public testimony in the fall. Yeah.
So now's the time, if you have thoughts that you would like the task force to consider.
I appreciate it. Yeah, that's awesome. Get out there, be part of your community, make your voice heard. Steve Krall and Sue Schrader, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. This is Juno
Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA.
Talk about deep, deep trouble. This is Sandra Tsinglo with the Lowdown on Science. Contaminated soil doesn't recover overnight. Pollution is stubborn. But below ground, nature has already begun the cleanup. How? Enter Danielle Stevenson and team at the Center for Applied Ecological Remediation. They collected soil samples from Superfund sites in California and examined the plants, fungi, and bacteria living there. Findings? Microbes living around plant roots can help transform or stabilize contaminants like lead, making them less harmful. Plants aren't just growing in soil, they're teaming up with microbes to eat pollution. Together, they offer a natural and sustainable way to heal contaminated land. Looks like the tiniest teammates are doing some pretty heavy lifting.
Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Jewish Film Festival at the Gold Town Nick continues with the documentary feature film Sabbath Queen on Sunday, June 28th and Tuesday, June 30th. And I am pleased to welcome in now, via the powers of the interwebs, I have a filmmaker, Sandy Dabrowski. Is that how you say your last name, Sandy?
Dubowski.
Okay, great. And I also have Norman Cohen here. Welcome in, Norman. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Appreciate you calling in. Our local contingent. Colette was having some difficulty. Colette Costa, who is from the Gold Town. I think I have her. Hang on, let me see if I can add her in here. Hang on 1 second, because, you know, we got to have Costa in the conversation, even if she's only on audio. Sure, it looks like her camera may not work, but Colette, can you hear us okay? Well, we'll see if she can get in there. We'll leave her up there and see if she can make her sound work. But this is going to be showing at the Gold Town. Norman, just before we talk to Sandy about the film, I also have the trailer I want to play. But can you tell me a little bit about the Jewish Film Festival? It's an ongoing sort of series that you all do at the Gold Town. And it continues. How often do you do films? Tell me a little bit about the festival and what the purpose of it is.
Well, the purpose is, and thank you, Boston, for having us on today. And thank Sandy for coming, and I hope Colette can also participate. Congregation Sukkot Shalom, which is the organized Jewish community in Juneau, is sponsoring the Juneau Jewish Film Festival series. And we call it a series because we've been running programs, films, basically once a month, starting in October. This is the final film of those of the six. We've had comedies. We've had a biopic of the story of Brian Epstein, the manager of the Beatles. Two Yiddish language and culture movies, the animated Passover story, and now in conjunction with Pride Month, we're showing Sabbath Queen. And so that's what the purpose is just to get a view of Jewish life and experience around the world in the United States. We hope to be able to do this again in the coming year. We're excited to have Sandy and Colette with us today, and especially excited that Sandy and Franny Newman, who's a member of the cast, will be in Juneau attending the showings. And Franny will be at both. Sandy will be at the Tuesday night showing and will be available for question and answer, which this is far beyond our expectations of what we thought we were going to see this year. And we're really excited about that and hope people can come and participate, come and watch the movies. That's again Sunday, the 28th, and Tuesday, the 30th of June.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sandy, I know you're going to be coming here to Alaska, which I think is great. Have you ever been to Alaska before?
No, this is going to be my first time to Alaska.
Oh, that's so cool.
I thought this was like a great moment to make it happen.
Yeah, this is perfect. So now I want to, I think, should I play the trailer first, Sandy, and then we talk about the film, or do you want to, okay. So, yeah. I don't know if you all be able to hear it while I play it, but I'm going to, cause I have to switch to a different screen here, but I'm going to play the trailer so people can hear it. And if you're on the stream, you'll be able to see it. But the sound of it is pretty cool and gives you an idea of what this film is about. And this was done over 21 years. This is a documentary that's 21 years in the making. So let's take a listen to that now.
I'm Amichai.
I broke the law.
According to our family story, I descend from 38 consecutive generations of rabbis.
My grandfather, who died so brutally.
My uncle, the chief rabbi of Israel.
I feel sorrow for a Jew who doesn't follow tradition.
In my early 20s, I was publicly outed and I did not give my consent.
I came to New York in 1997.
I discovered a way to be really who I am.
I've created this fictitious character.
Hadassah Gross.
The Sabbath Queen is almost in the house.
This is a fairy tale, but it's from the Bible, so it is true.
It's theater.
You take the traditions and you basically threw them away. You denied really who you are.
The next evolution, God optional, everybody friendly, congregation.
So many Jews are simply lost.
Women are claiming their right to pray the way I believe a Jew should be in the 21st century.
So we're pushing a lot of boundaries here to approach increasingly divisive voices.
And I want peace and I want compassion for the victims.
Will Hamas give you peace?
You're not going to have the same family experience that you had growing up. It's going to be different.
Intermarriage is ruining the Jewish nation.
What I was reading was saying you're finishing Hitler's job.
Questioning the faiths we grew up with was so painful.
It's a family business, and it's what I want to do.
Beautiful, radical fairy Amichai. You want to be a rabbi?
I want to go back to my uncle and say, okay, who gets to be a Jew?
A Jew who doesn't follow tradition, but to change it? Who are you to change it?
I think I'm doing the right thing. Sometimes I'm not sure. But a rabbi doesn't leave his congregation.
You do know I'm a fairy, right?
That is the trailer for Sabbath Queen. It's going to be playing at the Gold Town on June 28th and June 30th. Celebration of Pride Month, as well as the Jewish Film Festival, rounding out their presentations for this year. We're talking with Sandy Dubowski, the filmmaker, as well as Norman Cohen. I think Colette's having issues getting connected, which is no worries, because we have Sandy and we want to talk about the film. So, Sandy, tell me a little bit about how this project started all those years ago, over 21 years ago. Tell me a little bit about what was the impetus, the inciting action. How did this begin for you?
So I did a previous film called Trembling Before God, which was about Hasidic and Orthodox Jews that are lesbian or gay. And I went to Jerusalem to look for people to be in the film. And everyone kept saying, well, the chief rabbi of Israel's gay nephew, you should talk to him. So I asked Amichai to be in Trembling. He refused because he's too much of a diva and he wanted his own movie. he actually told me, I don't do collage. But, you know, honestly, in all fairness, Trembling was really about the struggle to belong within faith and within Orthodox faith. Mm. And Amichai was already like smashing the box, doing his own thing, like really reinventing Judaism in a different way. And so he did deserve his own film. And we just became friends and over 5 years developed a real trust and then started filming in 2003. And here we are 23 years later.
Wow. And so were you sort of just meeting up with him at different places or different times? He would say, hey, I'm going to be doing a thing. Like there's the great section of the trailer there where he's inside the synagogue and giving a speech and doing the whole thing. And so he's like, hey, I'm going to be doing this. And so, you know, you're going to get the camera crew ready and you're going to make it all happen. Is that how that worked?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's I had 1800 hours of original material.
How in the world do you even think about beginning to edit that together? Oh my God.
Yeah, it was 6 years of editing.
Wow.
I mean, this was like climbing a mountain. Yeah, I don't know many filmmakers who've really spent over two decades following someone's life.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And when you get to the point of seeing 1800 hours of film, and obviously, as a storyteller, you know, documentary films also tell a story, obviously, and you sort of start to see themes emerge. What did you start seeing emerge? I saw a few things in the trailer that were emerging out of there. The idea of women, you know, being able to you know, ascending. I thought that was really interesting. So were there how did those themes, when you started going through all that tape, what did you start to find?
Well, I think we're in a really sort of very interesting moment in history where I think all of us are questioning so many things, our institutions, our traditions, our ancestries. And that goes for LGBTQ and straight people, that goes for Jews and Christians and Catholics and Mormons and Muslims and evangelicals. Like everybody is like really wrestling with who we are and, you know, what it means to live in the 21st century. And I think Amichai has so many questions. I mean, he's a wrestler. I mean, in some ways that's what Jewish means. It means to be a wrestler and to wrestle with so many questions. So yeah, we were following every path, you know, of his life on so many levels of orthodoxy and progressive religion, on the status of women and equality, on, you know, what does it mean to hold on to the baby but throw out the bathwater? You know, like what does that mean for us now?
Yeah, absolutely. And this film has been screening for the last couple years in all different kinds of places, right? I mean, Juno's not the first, and it's not going to be the last. Can you tell me a little bit about the journey of, you know, once the film is complete, Then what are those next steps? Are you submitting it to different film festivals and all that kind of stuff? What's that journey been like for you?
It's been quite incredible. I mean, we had a premiere at Tribeca Film Festival in New York 2 years ago, and I just came from a Q&A. It was my 241st Q&A and event that we've done with the film. And I mean, I've taken it to art house cinemas across the US and Canada. I've been in over 80 film festivals. We've gotten 15 awards. Like, we're really moving between New Zealand and Curacao and Yellow Springs, Ohio, and Columbia, Missouri, and, you know, Poland and Germany. And I mean, the film's just really just going everywhere. And so I think I'm really excited because we're, you know, Alaska's a dream.
Yeah, well, like, it's gonna be great to have you here. And I'm imagining that during all of the film festivals and seeing screenings of the film and the Q&As that you've been able to, and the Sabbath Queen in the film has been able to be inspiring to people in terms of their, like you said, all the themes that you've been exploring, religion and progressive religion and women and what it is to be gay and all that, and also be religious. And I think that's I'm sure you've gotten a lot of feedback from people who come up to you and say, this film's really been impactful for me.
Yeah, I mean, we had a mom come to a cinema and she said, oh, wow, I have to bring my teenage daughters. And so she brought her 16-year-old and 19-year-old daughters. And the 16-year-old said, Mom, now after seeing this film, I can imagine being a Jew.
Oh, wow.
Because she just never had a role model like Amichai, who so embodied like what it would mean to be Jewish in 2026, and for that to be inspiring and meaningful and joyful and critical, and all of the ways at which she wanted to, you know, show up, you know, in her family and in her community and in her tradition. So that's been really meaningful.
And you can get inspired yourself by seeing the film Sabbath Queen Sunday, June 28th and Tuesday, June 30th at the Gold Town as part of the Jewish Film Festival. I want to thank our guests today, Sandy Dabowski and Norman Cohen, and can't wait for people to get out and see this film. Where can we find out more about the film? Isn't it sabbathqueen.com? Is that right?
Yeah, people can look at sabbathqueen.com, and we also have an Instagram, Sabbath Queen Film.
Sabbath Queen Film. Okay, great. Yeah. Well, Gunnath Cheesh, for being here. Really thank you for telling us about this film. Norman, thanks for putting on the Jewish Film Festival, you and all of the folks that are involved with that. And thanks to the Gold Town and Colette Costa for hosting it. I appreciate y'all being here today.
Thank you so much, Boss.
Gunnath Cheesh. That's going to wrap it up for this Juno afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Theater Alaska previews its summer productions. Plus, Pride Month is here, and that means another Glitz will have a preview. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Ogbe 91.7. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find our live stream archives over on KTO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. And Gunnath Cheesh to you for listening. Really appreciate you. We're thanking all of our supporters this month. You've all been so fantastic. Juno is a wonderful community, and I can't thank you all enough, and we at the station thank you. Gunnath Cheesh, have a wonderful Wednesday evening.